Hold on. Now you're on.
Hi.
There you go.
Oh, Sean. So all nice right. to see you.
All right.
It's great to see you.
We haven't actually started the show yet.
No.
So.
You are in the prime mystery.
Yeah, we're gonna do it now, though, right?
Right. This is it.
This is it?
This is it.
Okay, we should move this over so you get this where you want it. Yeah? Hey, give me a little level there.
Testing.
Sound good to me.
Have you been breaking bricks all afternoon?
Bricks and boards.
One more time.
I got my yellow belt.
Okay, one more. Oh, because he's wearing, it looks like a gi.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we actually technically need to start the show, though. All right, here's what we're going to do. First of all, turning your mic off, okay? And then, all right, I'm going to point to you. You're going to do you're doing the thing, right?
All right, I'm doing it.
All right, good. In 3, 2, 1.
This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is the Schnauzer Logic, episode number 31, recorded on October 11th, 2006.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
A city man goes on vacation in the autumn for a color tour of the Midwest. Stopping one night at a small tavern for a meal and a beer, he regales the waitress with his tales of his adventures and the amazement of not only the beautiful colors, but about how many flocks of geese he's seen flying south for the winter. The gray-haired tavern owner comes over and says, "Yep, those geese are amazing creatures." "How do you mean?" asks the man. Well, the owner explains, "That V formation they fly in is something that's evolved over 10,000 years to allow them to go further distances when they migrate." "Really?" asks the man. "Yep," says the owner. "The strongest flyer takes the point, and the other geese fall in formation in his airstream to allow them to relax a bit, not have to work so hard." "Why, that's amazing," said the man. "Yep," the owner goes on. "And when the point man gets tired, he falls back, and another well-rested goose takes over the point." "Wow," says the man, "I never knew that." "And did you notice," the owner asks, "that one leg of the V is always longer than the other?" "Well, now that I think about it, yes, I did," says the man. "Why is that?" "Well," says the owner, "that leg's got more geese in it."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Okay, don't you fucking look at me, you guys.
Son of Easter, my friends. Son of Easter, my friends.
That is a perfect Schnauzer Logic introduction joke. It's a bad joke. The last few weeks, the jokes have been funny.
What I appreciated the most was the two voices you had. So they could distinguish what part of the joke we're on. Because I was getting lost. And then I go, okay, now I know where we're at.
Wow.
That was good.
I had forgotten that's a professional. That you weren't here.
Yeah. Son of Easter, my friends. Son of Easter, my friends.
And now I have to follow that.
Just say it.
You're like
it's like coming on after Hendrix. I thought it was a wonderful joke because it segues into what I want to talk about, which is the ambiguity of words and definition by mechanism as opposed to teleology, which is all about today's Schnauzer Logic. That's what we're going to do.
I've missed you, Sean.
Son of Easton, my friend. Son of Easton, welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. It's episode number 31 being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 11th of October, 2006. And my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And I'm thrilled and delighted to have each and every one of you here for what is going to prove to be an outstanding show. First of all, without any further ado, he is back. He is better than ever. He's balder than ever. He's bigger than ever.
Whoa. Wow, that went too far.
Sorry. I need to back it up and say, Son of Easton, a Parvis Fatale.
Son of Easter Robin, son of Easter Sean. Doesn't it feel like we've reunited the band?
Yeah.
Where?
Doesn't it feel like it? Like we've all gone in separate ways and we realized that we weren't the same without each other.
Yes.
And we're D'Artagnan.
Yes. What? Yes, and I'm Keith Moon.
Oh, that's so sad. Keith Moon, John Bonham, and you.
John Popper.
John Entwistle.
All right.
Carl Popper.
And John Popper is a very large man. That's why I said that.
There's little butterfly shrimp poppers.
Oh,
I love those.
And jalapeno poppers?
That's what I was going for.
What other poppers do we have?
I don't know, but they're jello shooters.
That's right.
We'll get to that later on in the show. Anyhow, we got a great show for you today. Parviz Fatali is back from... Well, you're in prison. I mean, we've been...
Pretty much. It's called marriage.
We've been telling people that you had things, your birthday and all that stuff, but
you were making stuff up?
You were serving time.
No, I did have a birthday, and I appreciate Sean, you saying that, he must be new in this relationship. He's with his wife on his birthday. That's nice.
I don't think that was... Was that you? I thought
that was Sean.
I thought that was Lucky DeCoven.
DeCoven's been in tragedy of relationships. I don't take any advice from DeCoven.
He's bitter. Poor John is bitter.
It's true. It's true.
We love him, but he's bitter.
Bitter John.
Hey, Parviz.
And let's say son of Easter to Sean Meehan. Son of Easter. Back in your regular chair.
Yeah.
You've been over
it
here?
Feels good.
He's been sitting over there.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there have been other people, and we had a lovely co-hostess.
Revolving door.
Last week. And
sexual favors.
Whoa.
What? Sure, you should have been here.
It's a 30th anniversary last week.
Last week was the 30th anniversary, and it almost didn't happen.
I wish it didn't.
What?
I wish it didn't. I wish today was the 30th anniversary.
Parviz.
I brought my horn and everything.
Will you do the fandango?
I will do whatever
you'd
like.
That's really what they want to say.
That paper bag or something? Is that the thing?
No,
tells you in the movie?
Fandango!
A little paper bag tells you when the movie starts.
Oh, man. Let's get right to Kippadada. Let's get right to Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
Dick Cheney. Harry Whittington. Whitney.
Kiss my ass!
And Sammy.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
That could be Bobby Brown, too.
And in honor of the fact that we missed your birthday...
Once a year we celebrate with stupid hats and plastic plates the fact that you were able to make another trip around the sun. And the whole clan gathers round and gifts and laughter do abound. And we let out a joyful sound and sing that stupid song.
Happy birthday!
Now you're 1 year older.
Happy birthday!
Your life still isn't over.
Happy birthday!
You did not accomplish much. But you didn't die this year, I guess that's good enough.
You must have talked to my mom.
You haven't heard this before?
So no, I haven't.
Your fading health and hope you don't remind yourself your chance of finding fame and wealth decrease with every year. Does it feel like you're doing laps and eating food and taking naps and hoping that someday perhaps your life will hold some cheer?
Happy birthday!
What have you done that matters?
Happy birthday!
You're starting to get fatter.
Happy birthday!
It's downhill from now on. Try not to remind yourself your best years are all gone.
If cryogenics were all free, then you could live like Walt Disney and live for all eternity inside a block of ice. But instead your time is set, this is the only life you get. And though it hasn't ended yet, sometimes you wish it might.
Happy birthday!
You wish you had more money.
Happy birthday!
Your life's so sad, it's funny.
Happy birthday!
How much more can you take? But your friends are hungry, so just cut the stupid cake.
Happy birthday! Happy birthday! Happy birthday!
Very cool.
Ralph Cramden, Stanley,
Parviz,
Skippy the Bush Kangaroo,
the Arrogant Worms.
That's very cool.
Never heard that before. Happy birthday.
That's cool. That's very cool.
A little happy birthday song there.
Thank
That's
you.
A little bit for you, a little
Thank
bit
you.
From me, a little
Thank
bit
you.
For my friend Marjorie, who had her birthday last month. That
cool.
Blink's heading out to Marjorie and to young Dimitri as well. So
very nice.
So what did you do for your birthday?
Went out to dinner and went to a Starbucks.
And that's a special thing for you?
No, not special. It was just it was a school night. It was a work night, so you know I had to be in bed early.
Was this a big birthday? Was this like a 35th kind
36.
Of?
36.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Thought you were younger.
Oh, thanks. 4 years though, it'll be the big 40. I'll be through depression and I'll lose my hair.
I didn't find 40 all that bad.
I heard it's very monumental.
It didn't strike me as very monumental.
Yeah, me neither.
You no?
Nope.
No. No, I passed through it with ease. I mean, it was just another birthday.
Just like a colon blow.
Well, those, I think, are exciting.
Some of them are with ease.
I passed through those like birthdays.
49 a day.
I don't even know what that means.
How was your birthday?
Well, you were...
I could not make it. But how was your birthday?
My birthday was fine.
You had a nice festivities?
The birthday itself was actually a fairly quiet day. It was Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, that's no time for celebration. So on my birthday, I actually did very little. I actually spent most of the day in this room, as you can see over in the corner over there, punching a hole in the wall with a drill under the table. Do you see it?
I do.
You know, you don't.
I do see it. It looks like a 2-year-old drilled that hole. That's what I see.
Thank you. I use a 2-year-old drill.
Or a 49-year-old. Somebody drilled that hole.
So it's one of those things with a little cutting blade thing on the end there.
I'm a commercial plumber. I know what he's talking about. She's talking about, sorry.
You know, this is the thing. He's gotten snotty now that he has some skills.
I know.
Have you noticed that?
Yes.
It looks like a 2-year-old did that, you know. My second week in commercial plumbing school. Wait, let me tell you. Well, it looks like a residential plumber did that. Oh, my God. Look at the drywall damage. Oh.
How would you have done that?
Same way.
Would you have some kind of fucking laser? Like little mice with lasers on their head? And you'd paste a little bit of cheese paste that you'd kind of put on the wall in an X and let the mice just kind of...
I would have hired somebody.
It's much... Wow. Yeah. Wow.
He'd still be taking bids.
and bribes.
Yeah.
He'd be taking money under the table. He'd be like, hey, listen, a little kickback for punching a fucking hole in the wall. And weren't we talking about me?
You were. And your birthday celebration.
Anyhow, so
you spent the celebration on your knees.
Yes. Punching a glory hole in the wall of my own apartment. Good times.
Good times.
Good times. And running a cable. You see there's a white cable that runs through there. That white cable runs around here to the other side to a couple of boxes on the floor behind me, which are attached to my sphincter muscles. No, which...
And when he squeezes them, it makes the show good. It sends a signal to the boxes, which improves the quality of the program.
So I need to squeeze more, I guess.
Wow.
I don't fucking know what to say to that.
Just crunch. Crunch, Robin. Crunch. For the love of God.
All right. See? Aren't you sorry you weren't here?
Yeah. I missed this. Speaking of my job.
Whoa. Holy cow.
I have passed 6 months. I went through my 6-month anniversary.
That's incredible.
6 months.
Is that right?
Yep. October 3rd was 6 months.
Wow.
I still know nothing.
Well, you know that's a shitty hole.
It's not a shitty hole. It's just a little bit better than mine.
He's got a harsh critique down.
Because I get harsh critique.
That's the crappiest weld I've ever seen. What did you sweat that pipe with?
Tough love. It's a scar. No, I need something straight, but it's like a plumbing term that like SC like.
He knows nothing. Why didn't you take him at his word?
You're the wrong guy. All right, here's what we're gonna do.
Wrong everything.
We need to. We'll take a break.
Wow.
We'll come back,
regroup as the band.
I'll let you do the opening.
Thank you. Because
you hadn't been around in a while.
And I missed it.
And it was pretty much a pity opening. I mean, What? No, you did a terrific job.
Thank you.
Yeah, for an amateur. I mean, that's that opening was kind of like my opening in the wall. That was an opening.
Small and jaded.
It had plaster. There's an opening with plaster dust around it. That's all I'm saying. And you were worried we wouldn't have anything to talk about today.
I wasn't worried. Can I do my Sean impression real quick for Sean?
Could we ever stop you?
Ackroyd's, my friend.
That's damn good.
That's actually pretty good.
That's
Do you remember what you said that in a connection with?
Yes. It was...
Where'd that come from?
The squirrels fucking in that yard.
No. The original Ackroyd's is a quote from a running back, the now deceased former NFL rushing leader from the Chicago Bears. I can't recall his name. Famous. Died just a couple of years ago of liver cancer.
Okay.
And he was about to be overtaken by... whoever the running back for the Cowboys was through their glory years. And he didn't really like him. And you could tell that there was some kind of sense that he didn't do his push-ups, he didn't pay his dues.
Gotcha.
But he grudgingly acknowledged he was a good running back and said, you know, I got to give him his accolades. So it was from him. You know, you Bears fans out there from the Chicago, you know, it's from your glory days. It's you all know who he is. I can't remember his name, but
put it up on the blog.
He brought us on he brought us in on Ackroyd's.
And you were just quoting him.
I was quoting him. That was not a contrivance of my own design.
Gotcha. Well, there you go. Something we didn't know about Schnauzer logic.
Or Sean.
We've gotten some emails and some messages. I'd like to talk about them when we get back.
I mean,
we
want
to talk to Well, they're criticisms that are, I think, worth talking about.
Can't be about me.
No, I guess not.
He's in the clear.
I've been out of here for 3 weeks.
And all that, believe me, it's not enough.
Statute
of limitations on a crappy show.
Ooh.
Exactly. So the music today. So I realized that I mentioned to you, I was kind of feeling down today. Things are just not popping. They're not clicking. You're not locking. You know, they're just not doing what they need to do for me. And so I thought to myself, you know what? There are songs that I used to play for me that made me feel good by bands that nobody ever hears anymore. Like The Tubes. They don't get any airplay.
Yeah, that's a good
Robert
band.
Palmer. He doesn't get any airplay.
He's dead.
Okay. But nevertheless, Citizen King. No airplay. Early Springsteen. Not the later stuff, but like Greetings from Asbury Park.
The really boring stuff.
That's a great album.
So
you're wrong.
So we're going to play some of my favorite stuff
cool.
that doesn't get played on the radio anymore.
Cool.
And we'll start off with a little bit of Tubes, I think.
Right on.
All right. We'll come back on the other side. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Sean Meehan is in the house. Parviz Vitali has returned from prison. And he's going to explain what that teardrop that he's got tattooed under his eye is all about. And we're inviting you to stick around. If I were you, I'd listen to Parviz. He wants you to stick around. You better stick around.
I heard that term a lot in prison.
What term?
Stick around.
Okay. Hey. Good to see that this hasn't affected. It's good to see it being off hasn't affected your timing.
In the head, out the mouth. In the head, out the mouth.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Representative Foley. We'll be back on the other side.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Kidnap an heiress or threaten her with a knife. What do you want from life? To get cable TV and watch it every night. There you sit up, lump in your chair. You met tonight. How can you tell when you're doing all right? Does your bank account swell while you're dreaming at night? How do you know when you're really alive?
citizen, you are entitled to a heated, kidney-shaped pool, a microwave oven, don't watch the food cook, a Dyna Gym. I'll personally demonstrate it in the privacy of your own home. A king's... What do you want? A foolproof plan and an airtight alibi. Jewelry. A Gucci shoe tree. A year's supply of antibiotics. Dylan's new unlisted phone number. Swizzle stick. Rosemary's baby. A dream date in knee pads with Paul Williams. A new Matador. A new Mastodon. A Mustang. A Merc Montclair. A Meteor. An MG. Or... Mort Moriarty, a Maserati truck, a new Monza, or a moped, a Winnebago, hell, I've heard of Winnebagos, we're giving them away, a Las Vegas wedding, a gold Kama Sutra coffee pot, or a baby's arm holding an apple.
We feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Crystal!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 23 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Parviz Vitali, www.schnauzerlogic.com. That is the web address, robin@schnauzerlogic.com. That is the email address. Phone number 206-666-6540 is the phone number for asking questions for Parviz or leaving us your comments. You can catch us on iTunes, on the iTunes Music Store. We got all our friends listed there now as well, so that's pretty cool. What else? MySpace.com/NowsLogic. And Sherry Stevens is in the house. In his house. With her
in
eyes.
In the house.
Do you like my eyes?
Do we like your eyes? Yeah. Ooh, they're creepy.
It's like the evil Captain Kirk. There's a...
She's straight from an eye exam. For your optical pureness. Hold on a second there. All right, hold on, hold on. We ain't done yet. Wait a second here. We gotta. All right. So if Sean reaches underneath the table by his side, you'll find both a headphone and another microphone.
So I will, Robin.
You'll need to move the soda, but you should be able to find both a headphone and a microphone. How do you like that?
Like a newborn.
It was. I birthed another radio co-host. It's just, it's an extraordinary experience, and you are all lucky to be here to witness it.
All right. So we'll let Sherry untangle her
you can scoot in closer.
Sabbatical cord there, whatever it is. Yeah, we probably need some books and stuff to...
I think it's an umbilical.
Is it?
Umbilical cord. We went with the whole newborn.
Oh, yeah, we did go with that. That was good time.
Did it go too far? Sabbatical cord.
I know, the sabbatical, yeah.
It makes no sense, but for some reason it's still funny.
Every 7
Maybe
years.
That's why.
All right.
Hold on, let me turn your mic on and see. Give us a little check 1 2 3.
Check 1 2 3.
Oh yeah. One more time.
Check 1 2 3.
All right, that sounds like you. Oh, but
please, it is me.
You need your you
with
need,
great big eyes.
Can you hear yourself?
I can hear myself.
Very nice.
You really need to start your checks at 5,000. A lot of places won't accept them.
Can you put sunglasses on? Because you're freaking me out, man.
I'm freaking myself at you. This
I'm bugging
weird.
Here. I'm definitely bugging. Right, you can move the mic. You can get it. Get
I'm
it good.
I'm good.
All right, fine.
Go on with your show now that I've disrupted.
No, you've done fine. Well, what I was going to say is we got an email last week on the website from. From one of the... actually, before we get to the email, you had asked about the questions for the Ask Parviz, and I think we ought to play that, because we did get... We got one birthday wish, which includes a question, So this is from our good friend Angela, who calls 206-666-6540, and here you go.
I love Angela.
Zona Vista, Schnauzer Logic. This is Angela calling from Boulder, and I have a question for Ask Parviz. Parviz, I want to know if you had a choice between being bitten by a werewolf or bitten by a vampire, what would you choose and why? Also, I wanted to extend a very happy 30th anniversary greetings to to you all. It's Schnauzer Logic. Most marriages don't make it to the 30th anniversary, so consider yourselves lucky. Robin, I want to say that I want to thank you for putting together a great show week after week. It's always funny, and I always enjoy it, and I always look forward to it so much.
I rescinded the check.
Sean, you deserve all the accolade you get. And I want to thank you for making the comment about wanting to be first to be bugged by the NSA. I want to be right there in line behind you to get bugged and to get radio chipped. So, you know, the NSA always knows where I am and what I'm saying. And Parviz, you're a natural wonder. We love you here in Colorado.
Wow.
And
I love it.
If we ever need a commercial plumber, you'll be the first that we'll call. Thanks, and I hope to hear this on the show. Bye-bye.
Well, wow. There we go. So thanks to Angela.
Nice. That was nice.
So what were the choices? A werewolf or a...
Or a vampire.
A vampire. Not a Dracula. Dracula is the name of a...
Yeah.
So what's the difference between the two? And then we can help him answer the question.
Well, of course, a werewolf
it's Parviz with violence.
Is a beast who is sometimes in human form, sometimes in the form of a wolf. I believe the full moon triggers the lycanthropic change. And so once a month, twice on some months, that could be an inconvenience, you would become a hairy beast. Yeah, I guess that's...
Much like women on their periods.
Wow. Wow. Let it be known it was not one of the men on the panel who said this.
I can say that.
Wow.
Direct
your comments
to... Right out and put you in a much better mood.
Wow.
And then I don't think that you have any memory when you're a werewolf. I believe it's all instinct at that point, and you kind of wake up the next day like from a really bad hangover after a horrible date.
Like when you're on your period.
Yeah. Just like that.
And then the vampire is just cool in that they are creatures who live by night and they drink blood, but there aren't a lot of drawbacks. You live forever.
They live forever, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
And
you never age.
A lot of taxes.
There's garlic issues.
Yeah, and taxes. The only thing certain for vampires are garlic and taxes.
Now, when do werewolves die, though? They can die. Can't they die?
If they die of natural causes, but of course they can be killed. I believe the silver bullet.
Is that a werewolf or a vampire?
That's a vampire.
I thought vampires
silver,
are
a cross through the...
No, I think the
is that
silver
a Coors
bullet,
Light?
I think, is the... I think the silver bullet is the werewolf.
Okay.
And I think that the cross and the holy water and that sort of stuff...
Is the vampire.
And the daylight.
Okay.
Is, and the fresh running water.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah. That's Coors.
All natural hops and barley.
As a matter of fact, yes. Angela's calling from Colorado.
That's right.
That's where Coors is made.
Okay. That is true.
But you're not answering the question.
Okay. First of all...
Sorry.
My life is a tragedy. First of all...
Damn it, I changed the station for one moment and something halfway interesting happens. You bastards.
Was that my question from last week?
Guess so.
First of all...
Hey, dude. You're really boring tonight.
No, go ahead.
Angela... I just want to say I love her very much. She's a beautiful woman. Secondly, I would much rather be killed or bitten. Was it killed or bitten?
Those were not the choices.
Okay, by a vampire. Much more than a werewolf.
Does anybody else here think that he didn't actually understand?
What was the question? What was the question? Was it killed or bitten?
Would you rather be a werewolf?
No, I thought she said we'd rather be bitten by a werewolf.
Well, fundamentally, I think she may have been specific about the means by which you would contract this horrible malady. But she wants you, I think, and I'm just spitballing here, but I think she wants you to select either the life of a werewolf or the life
of
a vampire.
Okay, I've selected it.
Answer the question.
All right. Okay, it has to be a vampire. It absolutely has to be a vampire.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty much already a werewolf. Vampires.
Whoa.
Vampires. Vampires do a lot of work at night. I used to work the night crew in Safeway, so I was already a vampire. Vampires look great. I think I don't, so I could use a little vampire in me. Vampires drink blood. right?
They do.
Do I look like a vampire now?
No, but you look like you have a little vampire in you.
Your eyes are open.
You're going through the change.
Yes. Exactly.
Vampires eat blood. I've eaten blood many times.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's going to require some explanation, my friend.
No.
No. You've got Sam Waterston curious.
I can't explain that. Vampires look great. They drink blood, and vampires come at night. And
what?
And they drink the blood of beautiful women.
Well, they can.
And men too.
I don't think you ever saw Nosferatu.
No,
I mean,
but
I think you're gonna get like a big potato head and funny ears, and you're gonna look like, you know, Klaus Kinski on a bad day.
Ooh,
yeah.
But I would never want to be a werewolf because I don't want to be in a Michael Jackson video.
You got to end with a joke.
It wasn't a joke.
No, it wasn't.
No.
I wound you.
Oh.
All right.
Angela, thank you so much. I love you to death.
We'll take a lot of breaks.
Isn't she sweet?
She's terrific.
She's fabulous.
206-666-6540. You understand the whole concept of Ask Parvis?
Who was answering the questions the last 3 weeks? Who was? Who?
Well, we weren't actually doing the questions the last 3 weeks.
Exactly.
We'd put a little moratorium. Ask Parvis had to go on hiatus.
It did. It went on a hiatus.
Its star was absent.
Why didn't any one of you have a segment called Look for Parvis? Nobody thought of that one?
Well, what if we found Parvis? That was the real fear.
Because we know that he comes at night. That's scary.
And that's vulgar.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
That went too far.
Oh. No, I'm having an orgasm. Oh.
But the show's getting better. I got to tell you.
I went to an Ivy League college. That's how you... Oh.
Sounds like a holiday orgasm.
Oh, he's currently transmitting the necessary signals to improve the quality of the show to the magic box behind the desk.
You're thinking of a Christmas orgasm. That'd be That's Santa Claus.
I miss Brian Cox.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break.
Oh, shit.
I want to we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little television with
We have to get to the emails that we're getting.
We will.
Oh.
We will. That's why we don't have any extra guests this week.
I'm trying to keep you on track.
Well, you're doing a terrific job.
I'm the producer of the show.
All right. Are you going to be here next week?
I'll do my very best.
And you have to leave early today.
I do.
Because you have some kind of... He told me, he said, I have to leave early today. I go, really? Why? He goes, I got a union meeting. Which for me is always the punchline of a joke. When you walk into a room and there's...
And what was your response after that?
I go, what did I say?
Are you in the union? No, I just wander into union meetings.
I'm starting with basics. What I meant to ask was, are you an officer in the union? I meant, are you an official in the union? And then you said to me, am I officially in the union?
Exactly, because it's funny. Because it's funny, you're not officially in the union until 1 year after your apprenticeship.
I did not realize that that was the...
Well, it's nothing to really realize. It just fell into my head as soon as Robin said, are you a member or official?
Well, you know, Robin is a trained barrister, and he understands. He explained this to me once. You never ask someone a question you don't already know the answer to. So his assumption
actually, what
was,
I said was, you don't ask somebody a question you don't want to know the answer to.
Oh. Oh, geez. A lot's gone wrong in my marriage, and now I know why. Oh, boy.
Sorry. I took the steam out of your rant there.
No, I'm done. I got to rethink my whole strategy at home. This has been devastating.
So I got to go to union meeting.
Because this is part of your schooling.
It's part of my schooling. It's like a field trip class project kind
of
thing.
They make them take a field trip to a union meeting.
Isn't that crazy?
Can you think of anything more incestuous?
You
have 30 seconds. Begin.
Well, tragically, I can't think of things that are more incestuous. And tune in to Nancy Grace later this evening to find out what they might be.
All right,
we're running out of time.
So we are.
Let's not take a break. Let's just keep going.
No, we got to take a break.
Take a break. We need to take a break. Otherwise, this show becomes like every show on KSCO.
Off the air?
Ponderous.
No, ponderous.
Oh.
Fucking ponderous, as Casey Kasem would say. that's funny?
Because wow. I know who Casey Kasem is. Oh. Hey.
Now that's funny.
I do Casey Kasem's voice. Do you want to hear it?
No, we got to go really
No, really quickly. Really quickly. Really quickly. Here we go. Casey
seconds.
Kasem, ready?
20 seconds.
Here we go.
No.
Acaloids, my friend. That's Casey Kasem.
All right, we're going to be back on the other side. Stick around, you guys. Stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
Madman, drummers, bombers, and Indians in the summer with a teenage diplomat. In the dumps with the mumps as the adolescent pumps his way into his hat. With a boulder on my shoulder, feeling kinda older, I trip the merry-go-round. With this very unpleasing sneezing and wheezing, the calliope crashed to the ground. Some old hot hat shot was heading for a hot spot, snapping his fingers, clapping his hands. And some flesh bomb mascot was tied to a lover's knot with a whatnot in her hand. And now young Scott with a slingshot finally found a tender spot and throws his lover in the sand. And some bloodshot forget-me-not whispered daddies with an earshot, save the buckshot, turn up the band.
Cut loose like a deuce, another runner in the night. Blinded by the light. told me not to look into the sights of the sun. Robot mama, that's where the fun is. Yeah.
More fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 54 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, Sherry Stevens, Parviz Vitali. I'm looking at all, and you got your sunglasses on there. You're looking very sweet and cool.
Thank you.
You just came back from the eye doctor?
I did.
So did they do that thing where they test you for, what is it? Is it glaucoma? Is that why they have to?
Where they shoot.
They dilate
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
They shoot stuff into your eyeball?
They don't really shoot it in your eyeball anymore, but it is a little uncomfortable.
You know, I just so that you know, my eye doctor doesn't do this anymore.
What does your eye doctor do?
She now has a thing that you pay like an extra $25 for, and it's a computerized three-dimensional radioscopic vision of the back of your eyeball. And so she said, we can either put drops in your eye and you can be blind for the rest of the day, or you can pay me an extra $25 and we'll use this machine.
Wow.
And you put your head into this machine and it kind of like sucks around the corner of your eye, and then it, like, you have to like stare at a red dot kind of thing, and it does like a whole three-dimensional picture, and then they have like pictures that they can use, so they keep them on a computer so they can compare them from time to time.
Well, you know, I think I did that the last time, because it was like you look into like a landscape and you have to look straight ahead, and then it does some kind of measurement.
That's different.
Okay.
That's the auto diopterator thing.
Okay.
That's the thing that actually sort of automatically figures out approximately what your prescription should be. But this thing actually sucks around your whole eyeball, and then I don't think it actually touches your eyeball, but it actually takes a picture of the back of your eye.
Oh,
so they were
cool.
able to actually show me that I had some thinning of the retinal mm-hmm. material, because I'm nearsighted. And
I have the same thing.
Do you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Slightly, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to take good care of our eyes.
Exactly.
This is ophthalmological extortion. I can't get over the... I can put the painful and unpleasant drops in your eyes, but for $25 more, I don't have to hurt you.
All right, listen, we got people on the phone right now. We need to get to them, so let's play the theme song, which unfortunately we played last week, and we had the show was broken last week. Hopefully it won't be broken this week, so we'll have to play the new song. Well, here we go, right now.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in nothing on. 57 channels in nothing on.
Who said that production values don't count? Here's the thing. With an intro like that, it almost doesn't matter if the segment sucks. Doesn't have to be funny.
Yeah, the pressure's off me then.
Absolutely. Son of Easton to Jason Nathanson, welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Blinded by the Light, by the way, my favorite song about the Holocaust.
Is that
you know, the line, wrapped up like a Jew in the middle of the night.
Wow.
Blinded by the Light, the flashlights come in and take the Jews in the middle of the night. Very poignant to my people.
That's comedy gold, my friend.
We're
all speechless now.
Yeah, no, it's we're the clearinghouse for all Holocaust comedy.
That was
look to Schnauzer Logic to bring you the best.
Very nice. Wow. Well, before we get to your segment this week, we actually got a comment last week from an email from one of our regular listeners who also has previously been a guest on the show, Steve Golson. Steve, are you on the line with us?
I am here, Sona Vista, Robin.
Sona Vista to Steve Golson. And Steve sent me an email that basically said that you were shocked that we would refer to loyal listeners, downloaders, and companions as fools. Thanks for picking that up at about an hour and 56 minutes into the show.
Exactly.
Nice to know that you're listening all the way through. The other thing that you said...
Some of the best comedy is right at the end.
Wait a second, I have to leave early today.
Actually, some of the best comedy is after the show is over when we're in the other room.
It does take me a while to notice, you know.
Yeah, but actually, now that I'm looking at it, that actually has nothing to do with Jason's segment. I don't even know why I read that, so I take that back. You had a problem with the whole, the way we were talking about Friday Night Lights. Why don't I let you explain that?
Oh, no, I just, the comment was that Friday Night Lights, the book, was not a novel. It was a true log of the 1988 season of the Permian High School football team.
You hear that, Nathanson? What do you have to say for yourself?
Yes and no.
What? That doesn't actually answer a question.
Well, then it was made into a movie, and then it was made into a TV show, and it got progressively more fictional as it went along.
I have strange, bizarre insight into that because there's the host of the show that I used to work for, John Ziegler at KFI. He actually wrote a book in response.
That's the best name dropping you can do, by the way.
he wrote a book in response to Friday Night Lights, and it was kind of about how Friday Night Lights, the book wasn't really all true. So, I mean, I don't exactly remember what I said that you take issue with, but
what say you?
Oh, no, it was just that the only comment was that it was the comment was it was a novel, that the book was a novel, and my comment was no, that, you know, this reporter went and he, you know, was at the city and watched the football games and talked about the town, and
I don't know how
truthful he was in his reporting, but he allegedly was truthful and gave real names and talked about real people.
I have a hard time believing that this is in fact the case, because we happen to know from past experience on this program that Jason Nathanson spares no expense in his research, that he researches arduously, assiduously. He concentrates on nothing but research. Jason, say something. Say something more than just it's kind of true and it's kind of not. Help me out here. Help me in your defense.
I like the book and the movie and the TV show. It's pretty good.
Well, there you go.
It's been a good beat.
Nice beat. Nice dance, too.
The defense rests.
I have to say that I grew up in Texas, and my high school actually played the Permian, the Odessa Permian football team every year, and regularly got slaughtered by them. But
That's what this is all about. You're upset that we're not talking about your football team.
Oh, No, not at all.
Did they ever call those defeats the Permian extinction? Because that would be kind of cool, kind of a geological thing, kind of. No,
this is Texas. You know, we don't talk about evolution down there.
Now, have you actually watched?
Until you become a geologist, and then you say, "Oh yeah, I know how it all works."
Have you watched the show, Steve?
No, I have not.
And okay, you read the book, see the movie?
No,
I didn't know what you're talking about.
I see.
That's why I'm being very circumspect in what I say.
Okay.
It purports to be a true story.
I see.
And it caused quite a bit of uproar down in Texas. I know that when it came out.
Well, so we're setting the record straight.
You have to understand that high school football in Texas is very akin to a religion, particularly in the rural parts of the state, where Friday night, this is what you do, is you go to the local football games and you cheer your team on. And it is huge. It is enormous. It's bigger than college football and pro football. You go to the high school games, and it's just an incredible part of your local pride, is your local football team.
Are you ashamed now, Jason?
I am.
Okay.
I have no word.
You have no word?
That's a problem on radio, my friend.
I have another question. How come Steve sounds so much better than you do? Steve is loud and clear and...
He does. He sounds like he's right in the studio with you.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
He's got a better phone. I don't know.
I have a headset on.
Ah.
Singular sucks.
Okay.
That could be.
What kind of headset do you have? Let's give him a plug, dude, because this is the best connection. You sound better than Parviz, and he's sitting right here.
Well, that's not hard to do.
Oh, whoa.
Wait. Have you read my book or seen my movie?
No. It's all fiction. It's a Thursday night.
Thursday night masturbate night, though.
That's Friday Night Lights. It's about Shabbat, right?
All right.
Jason, why do you do this to me?
Exactly right.
Well, listen, Steve, we do want to thank you very much for being a regular listener.
And a truth teller.
And a truth teller. Yes, a myth buster. And I did go back and listen to that segment. As a matter of fact, we were on the phone with Jan Karam, and Jan was trying to understand what we call people who listen to podcasts. Are they podcastees? Are they listeners? Are they viewers? She didn't obviously get the concept in general. But and I said to her, just very jokingly, in fact, I was already laughing, and I said, we call them losers. So I can't imagine anybody would take that seriously. Certainly not someone.
Other than me.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to have an MIT education and no sense of humor to be able to. Wait, sorry. So,
what are you trying to say, Robin?
This is what you said when you said that we should take out President Chavez. You said everyone would think it was a joke. No one would possibly take this seriously.
Who knew Pat Robinson was listening that week?
We've learned the hard way how rumors spread.
All right. Well, listen, Steve, thanks so very much. How's Terry's book doing?
Her book is doing quite well.
Why don't you give it a quick plug there?
Well, my wife, Terry Golson, her most recent cookbook is called The Farmstead Egg Cookbook from St. Martin's Press. And it's all about eggs and particularly what she calls farmstead eggs, which are very fresh eggs that you get from the farmer around the corner or from your own backyard or from the supermarket if you can find good pasture-raised eggs. And,
now, is that a novel or is that nonfiction?
it's truly nonfiction, and it actually has photographs taken in my backyard. So
is the webcam still up? Because as I recall, you had a webcam on.
Yeah, it was www.hencam.com.
Hencam.com. It is live, and you are welcome to come and visit and watch our chickens.
And what happens in the wintertime when it snows?
Probably the outdoor camera will be less interesting than the indoor camera at that point.
Okay.
They don't particularly like getting out in the snow. Their little feet get cold, and they will go out. They'll go out and dig around and play in the snow a little bit, but they'd rather stay indoors. So we do things like hang cabbages for them to play chicken tetherball with and whatnot.
Okay. Well, we'll have to have you back then. And
there you go.
It's like a Carnival cruise line in there.
Yeah. We have all sorts of winter activities for our girls.
That's great. They're getting more exercise than you are, Parviz.
Is there anything like a chicken prostitution going on in there?
Chicken strippers.
Well, you know, I do wonder about some of the people who do web searches and find our camera and come and visit. What exactly were they looking for?
Check those cookies. That's
that's what they were searching for. Yeah.
I think we could put a lot more keywords on the web page and we'd get all kinds of traffic. Hot chick.
Thanks, exactly. Steve.
Naked.
Cock.
He came through with a touchdown in the last seconds of the segment.
Whoa.
That's shit.
Whoa.
I'm in my vagina.
Oh, whoa. All right. Hey, Steve, thanks so very much for filling us in.
You're very welcome.
Take
Anything
care.
More I can tell you about the...
We'll let you know.
Football in Texas. Just call me right up.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Sana vista.
All right, Jason Nathanson.
Yes.
You didn't hang... Are you still with us?
I'm still here.
All right. Get a little closer to the mic.
All right, is that good?
Well, no. Actually, it's about the same, but that's okay. So what's going on? What'd you watch this week, my friend?
Well, upon your instruction, I watched some daytime television.
Now, I said to Jason that, you know, one of the things we don't really talk about, we talk a lot of about primetime TV, but there's the whole daytime Emmy Awards that's become a big segment of television now. More people working out of their homes, a lot of folks who, you know, a lot more money gets put into those programs. And
not
so,
working out of their homes, a lot of unemployed, as you
exactly.
can tell from the ads.
Exactly. And so I said to Jason, hey, for something different, how about watching some daytime TV? What'd you watch? What'd you think?
Well, I started off with The View on Monday, and I gotta say that I'm 10 times dumber for having watched that show. I mean, it's just it's a bunch of it's what I hated about Bill Maher's show, Politically Incorrect, is basically four people screaming over the top of each other, and you combine that with high pitched cackly women's voices, and it doesn't work.
Does Rosie O'Donnell suck?
Yes, she's kind of funny, but. I felt bad for Elizabeth Hasselbeck, the one cute young chick on the show. She's also the conservative on the show. And she comes out with her opinions on, you know, Iraq and the president and stuff like that. And they all just sit there and beat up on her. Now, what she's saying is usually pretty stupid. But, I mean, it's like watching wolves feed on a little deer. I mean, it's not entertaining television for me. And I don't understand why people would ever sit and watch it.
If she were homely, would you have this view? I noticed that you made a point,
interesting,
of noting her comeliness.
Yeah, I'd have to put that into a test, a double blind study with a, you know, an ugly chick and a hot chick. But watching anybody beat up on somebody like that, especially, you know, when they're younger and defenseless looking, it's hard to watch for me. And this has happened in the past. There's been big stories where Barbara Walters made her cry. They were talking about abortion. About the abortion pill, and they make the poor girl break down and cry on television, and it's supposed to be about the camaraderie of females, you know, getting together and gabbing, and it just doesn't flow.
Don't we see the same elements of television though in the evening programs? I mean, Barbara Walters is known for making people cry on her Barbara Walters specials, right?
Sure.
And that becomes very compelling television. And watching people shouting at each other is a staple of primetime television.
Case in point. Do you ever watch Hannity and Combs?
Personally, no. But okay. I'm not a fan of Hannity, but I do watch Hardball with Chris Matthews.
Hannity and Combs. Combs is a very ugly Democrat, and he gets beat up on all the time, and it's sad to watch that.
Now, he's not a Democrat. He's a liberal. He'll set you straight on that.
Will he?
He will. He does.
I'd like to see him come try.
All right.
Now, this is the kind of grudge match I like. If you get the two of you, that chick from The View, the other chick, the dumb one, Metinopolis, and you get them all, you all get together on mic, maybe greased, and that would be a show. That would be a daytime show. We'd all walk away with Emmys.
There you go.
I'll bring the grease.
So the View went through a lot of changes when Meredith Vieira left to go replace Connie Chung, who went over to CBS, who took over for Katie Couric. That's it, Katie Couric, who's now in last place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, who is married to Kevin Bacon. But she I don't know. She there was a whole lot of noise about that. That show seems to do very well in its time slot, though. I mean, doesn't it? It does. It's on opposite The Price is Right, isn't it?
And it does do very well. I mean, but, you know, The Price is, I don't know how similar those audiences are. I mean, if you're looking for a game show, you have The Price is Right. If you're looking for some chick chat fest, View.
And what's on NBC at that time of the morning?
Let's see. What was that? That's 10 o'clock. I don't know.
Okay. Sorry.
Doesn't Rosie O'Donnell and Barbara Walters
people go Parvis.
Doesn't Rosie O'Donnell and
really
Barbara Walters
to you?
Don't they bicker a lot and fight?
Not in the two episodes that I saw.
Okay.
Barbara Walters wasn't on one of them. Susan Lucci was the guest host.
All right.
And
Rosie's really taken over that show. That's what I thought was very interesting. I assumed that she would be the new kid on the block and that they would let one of the others, that Joy Behar would sort of be the master of ceremonies of the whole thing. But she's not. Rosie basically came in as the MC of the show. I was very surprised at that.
She's got a paycheck.
That's true.
That might be part of the problem because, I mean, Joy Behar and
Joy
Joy are two very strong personalities, and they're both competing for airtime and for funny lines because they're both comedians too.
All right,
so they're both trying to get their quips in.
All right. What else did you watch in daytime television? That's one show, 1 hour.
I watched Martha Stewart, which was just a waste of pretension, and her lording over everybody how she went to Barbara Streisand's party for her concert, and she was sitting at some fancy apartment overlooking Central Park, and that was she led off the show with that story, and she was just dripping with "I'm better than you are" attitude. I found that pretty much unwatchable.
How is that a different attitude though than Oprah?
It's different because Martha Stewart comes off with this more entitled snobbery, where Oprah, I mean, you know, Oprah thinks she's better than you, but she tries to be a little more down to earth. Martha Stewart doesn't even try.
So I mean, there's a fantasy that you could be friends with Oprah. Like if you and Oprah met like in Arizona, like she might actually talk to you.
For instance, just for instance.
Yeah. Whereas if you ran into Martha Stewart, she would have had you tasered.
Oh, she would have
me arrested. Even if you didn't approach her, she would have just had her goons taser you.
Martha Stewart would have her goons taser Oprah.
All right. Did you see anything in daytime TV that you did like?
I did, actually. I saw Ellen, which comes on at 3 o'clock here, at least in Los Angeles. And it was actually very funny. Ellen she has a very good gift of comedy, and she's very likable and seems very approachable. She's very funny with her guests. She's funny with creative segments that she thinks up. And I would watch her. She seems to me to be a natural replacement for Jay Leno. I know that Conan O'Brien is going to take over that slot, and he's probably going to be very good at it. But I think Ellen would do just as well.
Well, she's a stand-up comedian. I mean, so she has that gift of gab, right? That sort of, I mean, whether you like The View or not, Rosie seems to hold her own on that show.
Sure, absolutely. Ellen, you can be a stand-up comedian and suck at it. Ellen has a very good sense of timing, and she's very good off the cuff. And those are a couple things that you need to do a show like that when you compare them to, say, somebody like Megan Mullally, who isn't good, or Rachel Ray, who makes me want to vomit. I mean, Ellen is very good at what she does, and you know, there's a reason she's successful, and she's going to be around for a long time.
Well, she was just named to be the next host of the Oscars.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? She's going to replace Jon Stewart.
Yeah, she's moving up from Emmy to Oscar.
That's a big deal.
It is a huge deal.
That's a very big deal, because they're looking for a permanent host for that. And I thought they were going to give Stewart another shot at it. I wonder if he was considered to be too political.
My heart broke when I found out Pat Sajak wasn't going to get it, because I knew that he had vied hard.
What?
Oh, stop it. What? Just stop it.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking
about?
Pat Sajak's from Wheel of Fortune.
Thank you, Parveen.
No more calls. We have a winner. You felt like you hadn't said anything in a couple of minutes. And
no, I just woke up with her pet teacher.
It's like when you take a nap and you hear something in the background.
Is that
like,
Casey Kasem?
Yeah, you hear blah, 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 dinner. Dinner? 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 Dinner?
Like you, same thing with Pat Sajak. Pat Sajak? Pat Sajak?
It's interesting what words he has in his filters that can wake him up from sleep. Like, I've got a computer. Like, this computer will go to sleep. There's certain things that can wake it up, like a modem call or something like that. I would never have guessed that Pat Sajak was a word in your list.
Pat Sajak and Casey Kasem.
Those are words in your list.
That wake me up on a dime.
All right. Well, we'll wake you up before you go. Go. Oh, sorry. Oh, all right.
Slumped over on the steering wheel.
Oh, wow.
George Michael.
Yeah, we got it.
I'm the Dennis Miller of the podcast.
No, he's funny. Oh. Dude, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Hold on, wait a second.
Are you still there?
Wait, hold on.
Are you still there?
There we go. So you wanted to talk about something else this week, didn't you?
I did two picks for television, shows that you're probably not watching, but you should.
Okay, yes, please give us those.
One of them is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on FX.
Okay.
This is a show that they did, you know that Project Greenlight? They did a few years back.
Sure, with Matt and Ben.
And they picked it. Right. They did a kind of similar thing to do a TV comedy show. And this show was the winner of that. And it's on FX. Here it's on FX. It's got a horrible time slot. It's Sunday night at midnight. technically.
Yeah, I don't
Monday
think they're
morning.
Actually in original episodes now. I think the original series is over, right? And they're doing reruns.
Then you would probably be more researched on that than I would, as usual.
God bless.
But the ones they're playing, I mean, they're great. They play two episodes.
Oh, yeah, they don't go stale. Sure.
And it's funny stuff, fresh and original. The other show is on Showtime, Weeds.
Yes.
With Mary Lou Parker.
What'd you say? Say it out. Don't. Doesn't anybody understand how the fuck radio works? You can't
I
plant
both
a mime.
I put thumbs up and I said, that is my favorite show.
Yeah, but you
I
did it like this.
Show. I know.
Which still has to be guessed at by the audience.
I feel like we need to do a video podcast just so I can do that joke. We'll send out a little video of just me going.
Imagine if you will.
So you like that show?
I love Weeds. It's original. It's funny. The premise is great, and all the little subplots going on are fun too.
Now, did you watch the first season, or
did
you just pick? Okay. And what? And Jason, did you watch the first season?
Yes, I did. And I mean, it's hard to do a show about teen pregnancy and abortion and cancer and drugs and still make it very, very funny.
And what do you think's the magic in that show?
Good writing, a great ensemble cast: Mary Lou Parker, Kevin Nealon, and a bunch of other people who I haven't really seen before. But I mean, it's cast very well, and it's on drugs, so it's got good drug humor too.
Okay, I thought I was a big fan of it the first season as well as you guys were. This season, I thought that it suffered from and still suffers from what I like to think of as the Sex and the City complex. This is when a show starts off and it's very hip, but most of the people in it are kind of unknown. The show is not getting a whole lot of buzz, and then in the off season, it gets all of these acolytes, and when they come back. Even though it's the same characters, the people playing the characters know that they're now playing very hip, very cool, very sort of trend-setting folks. And that winds up affecting the performances of the characters. And so the characters, rather than being raw and honest, have an edge to them that's only an edge that you would have if you knew that you were an actor playing that character in the real world.
There is a little slight arrogance, I've noticed.
That wasn't there the first season.
It wasn't there.
You have noticed
that. You've thought about this a lot.
Absolutely.
It is noticeable.
Absolutely. It's kind of the sophomore slump, but I think I know why the sophomore slump comes. They realize that they're big shots in their own mind, and so when they come back to do the series again, that begins to affect them. And I think the show has gotten better as the series has gone on, but the first couple episodes this season were really tough for me to watch. So you recommend Weeds, which if you don't have Showtime, is available I think on DVD.
Yes.
And it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Once again, if you don't have FX on your cable, I think the first series of that is also available on DVD.
Yes, I believe it is.
And I believe they're going to be doing a third run of that. I'd read about that.
I hope so, because it's really, and I hope they give it a better time slot too.
All right.
It's really fresh and funny.
And before we go, did you have a political thing you wanted to get to today, or?
Yeah. There was on Drudge today, there was a TV commercial made by David Zucker from the Airplane movies and things like that.
Originally from the Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yes,
so
exactly.
He goes way the hell back.
And, you know, if you know who he is, you know his kind of brand of slapstick visual comedy.
Sure. Zucker, Abrams, and Zucker.
And in 2004, he became a conservative. He was a lifelong liberal, and he became conservative because he thought we weren't, Democrats, namely, weren't doing enough to keep us protected. They weren't doing enough on national security. So he made a commercial for the GOP, and there's a video of it on Drudge you can go watch, and it's hysterical. I mean, it's when you compare it to what political commercials are today. They're very boring. They're very dry.
I've got the audio. Should I play it?
Sure.
All right, we'll play the audio.
Does it work listening? I mean, listening to it without the visuals.
Well, you told me to download the audio and get ready to play it. Now you're asking me
that. There goes spontaneity.
Yeah.
How about the audio? I have that. Okay.
I got the audio.
You told me to do it.
I don't know. Is it any good? Is it funny?
That's what you told me to do.
Does it work? Well, tell you what. I'll start playing it, and at any point in the audio, when you think it's boring the audience, you just say stop, and we'll stop it there and see what the clock says. Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Here we go.
In the year 2000, in an effort to stop the North Koreans from building nuclear weapons, President Clinton's Secretary of State Madeleine Albright gave North Korean leader Kim Jong-il a basketball signed by Michael Jordan. The Democrats' thoughtful gift had two major results. The first was this, and the second was this. In a post 9/11 world, making nice to our enemies will not make them nice to us. On the contrary, to them, it is a sign of weakness.
Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya.
Did you say stop?
Yeah,
the Democrats have their own ideas on how to stop North Korea from building nuclear weapons.
Did he say stop or did you say stop?
I said stop.
Some people think the terrorists will change their ways if we only show our good intentions. No matter what we do, the fact remains there is evil in the world. History has taught us that evil needs to be confronted, not appeased. Evil dictators will be evil dictators, no matter what they do.
Yes, I'm still here.
Unlike basketball.
Go get him, you animals!
You still there?
The security of the United States is not a game.
Hello?
Can we afford a party that treats it like one?
It'll clean you right out and put you in a much better mood.
You couldn't hear me there?
We're still here. Is anyone out there? Is anyone aboard? We've lost Robin for a little while. So I take it this commercial is effective when both the visual and audio components are rolled together.
What you're missing in the visual is a lot of things like Madeleine Albright painting the caves of Osama bin Laden and playing Kumbaya with terrorists and things like that.
Well, maybe people should just go see Team America, the uncensored version.
It's in a very similar vein. The problem is GOP strategist said that the commercial was impossible to play. That there was no way that they could play it, and which is just a real stupid move on their part because it would be a really effective commercial for them, and it would make a lot of people sit up and take notice.
You know, I did watch it this afternoon when you and it's available on YouTube. Although you have to actually be a subscriber to YouTube in order to be able to see it. You can't simply be one of these folks that browses by YouTube. But I did go look at it this afternoon. It is so over the top that when I saw it, I assumed that it was a parody ad. I may be wrong. I think that Zucker is fucking with the Republicans.
That's an interesting possibility, but I think it's over the top is what makes it effective. I'm not going from a content standpoint. I'm going from a purely advertising, you know, what makes people actually pay attention.
The parody of Madeleine Albright is so broad. They have Kim Jong-il doing a layup. It's a shot that you could see in Police Story, or a Police Squad,
and it's
right?
Funny. It's funny.
But I mean, it's so over the top that as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, I think he's fucking with everyone. I think this is his way of going to show just how rabid the right is willing to accept absurd things. And he's going to go, I was fucking with you people. I'm sure he's upset they're not putting it on because it would make the Republicans look like asses. Maybe I'm the only one.
That's definitely a possibility, but I think it would make them seem hip and young and creative.
Really?
Can't happen.
I think it would go after the young eyeballs that they so desperately need.
All right. Well, listen, you can watch it over on Drudge. We'll try to put a link up on the webpage. Sorry, that was too funny. All right. Hey, how's the job search going, my friend?
It's actually going very good this week, and I should have some news on that by next week.
Well, we're looking forward to that. Rosemary asked about after you at KSCO. Well, Sean and I went over to the station this weekend for their powder party.
Oh, and, you went to that?
We did, and Rosemary asked after you, asked how your job search was going, asked if there was a reason that you weren't calling into her show in the mornings. Are you going to be calling in, or are you kind of...
We're retooling that segment.
I see. Okay. Well, why don't you just steal what you do on this segment? That's what you did before.
That's what we did before, but it doesn't work with her as well as it works with you guys.
I see. Okay. Well, there you go. Well, listen, what are you going to talk about next week?
Next week, we might be talking about my new job.
Oh, very exciting.
Very interesting subject to talk about.
Hey, you were going to get David Spade's writer's assistant girlfriend, Tina Fey's thing.
Yes. I'm in the process of getting her.
So what you didn't know, this is very interesting, what you didn't know, after you were on last week, we had Jan Caramon. And I said to Jan, because, you know, Jan did stand-up with those guys, and she and David are both from Arizona. And I said to Jan, in the early days of stand-up, back when you were doing the Young Comedian Special, et cetera, were you guys friends with each other? And she said, I was friends with David Spade until he stole my material and used it on Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
I would love to get David and Jan back together again. I think we can make that happen on Schnauzer Logic.
Well, I'll try my hardest.
Well, no. So I think we need to do this very carefully. I think we need to first get your friend on and have her have a good time.
Okay.
And then, because if you go right at her and say, listen, we need to get David, then it's going to be, am I wrong? I mean, Sean, you've got a lot of experience doing this. You know the way of the dragon.
I think we need to get Madeline Albright to give them both signed basketballs. I think that'll get them on.
It seems to bring terrorists together.
Thank you. All right. I'm glad I went to you for this. That's good.
You're welcome.
All right.
Anytime. I'm available.
Okay.
Weddings here all week.
Bar mitzvahs. All right. So we still want to get your friend on because I think it'd be really interesting. But in the back of my mind, I have this fantasy that I'm going to be like a very young, transgendered Howard Stern. And I'm going to bring these two names back together again. And there'll be love in the universe. And we'll get listeners.
We can only hope.
Just choose one. All right. Thank you, my friend.
All right, thank you.
Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I fear you're going to be a very young Jerry Springer, and a terrible fight will break out, and
it'll
be
chairs.
It'll be up to Parviz and I to pull them apart, the hair pulling, the whole...
Well, there won't be any hair pulling with Parviz.
No, well, fortunately, we'll both be fairly immune to that, okay. But both David Spade and Jan Karam both sport significant locks.
This is true.
So there could be some blouse pulling. There could be some hair pulling.
And you used to be a locksmith. So it's you got to go. It's 6:30.
I got to go. Yes.
That's it. You got to leave us.
That's it. Good night, everybody. Thank you. Good night,
right,
Boston.
Well, thanks very
good
much.
Night, Cleveland.
Next week, we'll. Can you stay for the whole show next week?
Yes, I can.
All right.
Yay!
And woo! I would love to see everyone here next week.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, I can't be here next week.
Okay.
Just so you know.
We'll bring the band back together next week.
But the week after, maybe.
All right.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I can't be there the week after. I can always be here.
Just give me the key to the house.
I have no life. She has a key to my house.
I do.
It's perfect.
We'll all right.
All right,
we love you,
bye-bye.
My friend.
I love you too.
Wait for me to actually. Oh. You don't have to be like the bad guest of the Daily Show that get up while he's still saying goodbye. Just stay in your seat. We'll go to a break. We'll come back. We'll be talking some more. All right. All right. Love you, my friend. Glad you're back.
Thank you.
Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Parviz Vitali, Sherry, Steven, Sean, me, and we're all back on the other side. So stick around.
Gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
When Karl Marx was a boy, he took a hard look around. He saw people were starving all over the place, while others were painting the town. A public-spirited boy became a public-spirited man. So he worked very hard and he read everything until he came up with a plan. Be no exploitation of the worker or his kin. No discrimination, 'cause the color of your skin. No more private property would not be allowed. No one could rise too high, no one could sink too low, or go under completely like some we all know. If Marx were living today, he'd be rolling around in his grave. And if I had him here in my mansion on the hill, I'd tell him a story that would give his old heart a chill. It's something that happened to me. I'd say, Carl, I recently stumbled into a new family with two little children in school, where all little children should be. I went to the orientation. All the young mommies were there. Carl, you never have seen such a glorious sight as these beautiful women arrayed for the night. just like countesses, empresses, movie stars, and queens. And they'd come there with men much like me, froggish men, unpleasant to see. Were you to kiss one car, nary a prince would there be. See, Carl, the world isn't fair. It isn't and never will be. They tried out your plan, it brought misery instead. If you'd seen how they worked it, you'd be glad you were dead. Just like I'm glad I'm living in the land of the free, where the rich just get richer and the poor you don't ever have to see. It would depress us, Carl, because we care that the world still isn't fair.
Road stories.
Crack me up.
Oh, yeah.
They're funny.
Keeps me entertained.
Funny, funny comedy.
Those tree-hugging sissies.
And now your host, Brian Cox.
Hi, everybody. Brian Cox and Real Road Stories from the Real Highway Comics. Brian Stollery. You know, we touched on Brian in an earlier episode. And as the movie trailer guy would say, and now the whole story can be told. Brian Stollery, he's probably one of the most clever comedy writers that I've met. And he's also an accomplished actor and stand-up comedian. Ever since I've known Brian, I've noticed that he works extremely hard at his craft, and it's a real pleasure for the audience once he starts performing. He got a call from an agent all about a super gig. Brian was shocked to find out that he was going to be the opening act for Weird Al Yankovic's Cross Canada Tour. Now, any comic would have jumped at this gig. I am so happy to find out, though, that Brian actually got the gig. And I don't know who it was that said, every time a friend of mine succeeds, a little bit of me dies. But anyway, he got the gig. He definitely worked for it, though. You know, paying dues, that sort of thing. He's one of the great guys. You know, he never says a bad word about anybody, and he works very hard. The agent set up the tour with Weird Al Yankovic. Off Brian went, realizing that he would only be paid, get this, $150 a night. But it would look good on his resume. So Brian got out on the road. He found out that Weird Al's people and the agent hadn't figured in accommodations or food for Brian on the whole tour. Now, what was he going to do? He needed a place to stay. So Brian came up with an ingenious plan. No, not kill Weird Al's people, not kill his agent. But he found out that he was given 4 complimentary tickets for each show so he can invite friends of his in every city that they would stop in, you see. Brian launched his fantastic plan. He would call ahead to a hotel in the next town that they would be performing in, and then he would barter for a room with his freebie tickets. You know, you give me a room, I'll give you 2 free tickets to the Weird Al show. Brian was spending a lot in phone charges, but he would always have a place to stay. This plan would work most nights, but some it didn't. And Brian would end up sleeping in the crew truck. Talk about your career being on fire. You know, it really amazes me that Weird Al's people wouldn't spring for a room or pay Brian more so he wouldn't have that worry hanging over his head on every single show. Or maybe even the thought, hey, what would happen if that was me? But no. Anyway, the tour was now in Ontario, Canada. The stop was London, Ontario. Brian made his call the night before, set up the hotel, told the hotel that he was with the Weird Al Yankovic show and needed a nice room. As he mentioned to me, sometimes when he was doing this barter deal, some of the hotels, anyway, he'd be talking to the underlings and not the top management. So sometimes he'd get to the hotel and they wouldn't know what the hell he was talking about. So Brian was a little worried when they started pulling into London. He was wondering about the hotel. They let him check in, cost 4 tickets. He went to his room, a nice room, and crashed. The sleep was interrupted at about the 3 hour mark with a knock at the door. Brian answered it and was greeted with a huge fruit basket. He took it and chowed down. He says, "I wonder who would send me a fruit basket." Then he read the card. Said, "From staff in management, L. Hope you enjoy your stay. Don't worry, it'll be kept in confidence." Brian thought, "Wow, they think Weird Al is staying here." About an hour later, Brian was getting ready for the show. The phone rang. It was the manager saying, "Brian, we're wondering how Al is enjoying his stay." Brian said, "Al loves this hotel. He loves it. He's going to tell all of his friends when they come to London, Ontario, to stay here." Alas, my friends, the tour ended. Yes, Brian didn't get rich, but he did make some good contacts and learned all about the hotel business. Well, when Weird Al did his second tour of Canada, he called Brian to be the opening act. He paid him a lot more, and there was a hotel room waiting for him at every stop. Brian Stollery went on to appear in movies like Legends of the Fall, Rat Race, Rise and Fall of Heidi Fleiss, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and a ton more on both sides of the border, I might add. Weird Al Yankovic, whatever happened to him? I'm Brian Cox, and that's been Road Stories of the Real Highway Comics.
Welcome back. We're 29 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic, the podcast. It's episode number 31 being recorded on a Wednesday. It's the 11th of October, 2006. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney to his arts of humor and master degree in city planning. See your lips moving.
I'm trying to get that down.
You're doing all right. You need to, you've moved, because Parviz is gone, so we've got you in a different, we need another level there, so go ahead, give us a little 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3.
Go ahead, more.
1, 2, 3.
All right. It's actually not the end of the mic. That's where you talk. Go ahead.
I'm learning all this. Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah. See, that's,
I like that.
He did that. So
okay.
If you need to move it like this, and then
yeah,
you can get.
Okay, I'm good.
Oh, that's good. All right, good. Quite like repairing the plane while it's in the middle of the air, 30,000 feet. Now, all you need to do is pull a little bit of cable.
We had a cautionary tale about that very thing today.
What's that? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's tragic.
We're recording this on the day that New York Yankees pitcher, now his name is slipping my mind, And he's slipping everyone's mind here.
Don't do this to me, please. That's why I didn't bring it up. I forgot his name.
Oh, well.
I thought it would be embarrassing. I didn't want to do
Corey.
It without his...
No, I forgot it too.
Anyways.
Fuck.
He crashed into the building on 72nd.
Thanks.
And I remember the street.
God.
So, there you go.
That's very exciting. Well, maybe Eliza will know. Let's get to realizations, and maybe she'll know what's going on.
She's
right?
Young and alert.
She is. She may actually know, and while we're playing her intro, she may have a chance to Google it. So here we go.
Is preceded by an immovable face. He who would, in his own person, test the fact of God's presence, can do so by a living face.
We missed her last week because we waited too long and she was watching...
Gilmore Girls.
No, America's Top Model?
Project Runway.
Project Runway. And so by the time we got around to her, she was gone. Apparently, not only is she not in a room for Project Runway, she turns her cell phone off for Project Runway.
Wow.
This is serious stuff.
Is that the one where they make the outfits? They make the costumes?
I don't know. Is that what is Project Runway?
Oh, I hear this background music now. I can't hear you very well.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, I can hear you because of the background music.
Oh, okay.
Project Runway is an amazing show. Tonight is part one of the season finale. This is the first
reality television show I've actually been interested in. They have fashion design. It's run through the Parsons New School in New York. And they get 15 fashion designers who are not exactly amateurs but haven't made their name in fashion to come, and each week they have a new fashion challenge. So, for instance, one week they had to create an outfit for a businesswoman. One week they had to create an outfit out of recycled materials from New Jersey Recycling Plant. And then each week someone is voted off. So they're down to the final four members, and these four contestants are going to be showing their creations at New York Fashion Week.
And this is appealing in ways that other reality shows are not, because why?
I think because these are actually talented people on the show who are using their, I guess, fashion skills, that I guess kind of sounds a little bit sillier than I mean it to sound. But these are people who are talented and are being really creative, and you get to watch the creative process each week.
And so there's no goofy reality drama, or do they throw some of that in to broaden the appeal?
They throw in the drama. There were two characters, or not characters, there were two people on it who had a feud. On one of the episodes, they had to design clothing for other contestants' mothers, and one of the contestants started fighting and insulting one of the mothers. It was pretty offensive. But at the end of the show, it's really about what they create, and I think that's what makes it more interesting, is that that's what's valued higher than the sort of personal drama.
Now, do you find, I mean, most of the time, I remember when I was in college, I think those 5 years, yeah, I was on a slightly extended program for my undergraduate degree.
But, 7 for me.
Okay, whatever. During those
best
during
7 years of my life.
During that period of time, I didn't watch television. It wasn't an interest. I there were too many other things going on. And so there's a whole block of time where I think there were shows that came and went, and I could not tell you who they are or what was going on at that point. And then, of course, once I get back into the real world, I just picked up where I left off. How about you? Were you a television person before? Do you find that you watch more or less in college?
I've never really been a television person, or not since I was really young. This is the only television show that I watch, and I'm actually happy that it's going to be the season finale because I'm tired of watching it as much as I like it. I watched 6 Feet Under before this, and then that ended, so I needed to find something to fill that void. But no, generally, I don't really like to watch TV.
Do your peers, is it a big college thing? You know, we always hear, like, for example, Letterman, right? Letterman is big with college kids. The Daily Show, big with college kids. But I wonder how they know that and who these college kids are and when they have an opportunity to watch that much television. Do you think that there are other people that are watching more TV, just sort of your personality, you're just not watching that much?
Yeah, I think there are people who watch a lot more TV. I just personally don't like to watch very much. The Daily Show is very popular, but it's funny because a lot of people don't even need to watch it on television set. They download it. Like, one of my roommates last year bought the equivalent of a podcast on iTunes, and she got The Daily Show on her computer.
Now,
so people do definitely watch TV.
So they do watch TV. So in a commons room or in each other's room, I mean, do people have plasma sets? It's been so long. I had a 12-inch black and white TV, and I was damn glad to have it too.
Yeah, we actually have it in our room. We have an incredibly small, I think it's like a 10-inch TV or something that one of my roommates brought.
That's un-American.
Bought freshman year.
Does your father know?
So actually, one of our friends. We're borrowing a larger TV for the year because their room is so small they couldn't fit it in it. So we're babysitting a TV.
Good
but
times.
None of the rooms here have cable, so you have to get those little like bunny ear antennas, and they don't work very well. So people watch in common rooms. If you get reception, you can watch in your room, but we don't really get very much reception.
No one in Harvard has sort of figured out a way to put on one of those little DirecTV satellite dishes into one of their rooms and shoot
some
it out.
Some people have them. You're not technically allowed to have them.
Excellent. Makes me feel good about Harvard. Speaking about feeling good about Harvard, so here's something that I noticed in last week's Crimson. By the way, did you get any feedback from all the people that we called when we were looking for you?
No one notified me about
okay.
it.
Okay. We managed to call, I guess, 3 different people and speak to them and mentioned your name. They were all very very nice, including the guy that we said we wouldn't put on the air. We put on the air.
I'm sure he didn't listen to it.
I'm pretty sure he didn't listen as well. And even if he did, he wouldn't be able to reach me this far away because students don't have any money.
It's very true.
So last Wednesday, on the 4th of October, the cover of the Crimson said, report recasts the core. Preliminary plan would force all undergrads to take courses in 7 areas, including American history, new reason, and faith requirement would make the study of religion mandatory. Now, this seems like a big deal to me, not just the religion part, but all of the things. They're looking at life sciences, physical sciences, the ethical life, culture and tradition changes, the United States, societies in the world, reason and health, and analytical reasoning. How is this being perceived on campus? Is this sort of, yeah, whatever, we're already doing this in a different form anyway, or is this a radical change to the core curriculum?
I think that it's really not a very radical change to the core. In terms of the classes they'll be offered, I think the philosophy is different than the current core, and I think the reason that it's not causing a huge problem right now, or like a big uproar, is because it really won't affect anyone who's here right now. Or probably not, because I don't know if it would go into effect. Maybe it will. I'm not totally up on the information, but I do know that the focus of the new core is more on concrete knowledge and things that are applicable to the real world, as opposed to the core now, where it explores similar ideas. There are history classes, there's math classes, but it's more theoretical. And I think there was in the article, they were saying something about how only 4% of students are going to go into academia, and so they want to prepare people for the real world. But I think that in a way it's sort of against the whole Harvard philosophy of coming here and studying some things and not really knowing anything when you leave.
Is that the philosophy?
in a way.
Wow, I'm sorry I didn't go there.
Well, no. I think the philosophy right now is more learning how to think as opposed to learning facts.
Well, that's my point. So I went to the little technical school down the street from you guys, and one of the things that I remember about my experience at MIT, for example, which was primarily technical, I remember saying, or someone saying to a professor in a class, why don't you teach us how to program computers? And the professor said, this is MIT. We don't teach you how to program computers. We assume that you'll be smart enough to teach yourself how to program computers, and anything we could teach you would be out of date by the time you got into industry. What we're going to teach you is, we're going to teach you how to think about computer design. We're going to teach you how to think about architecture of computer languages, so that you'll be the group that actually designs the computers and not the knowledge. What we teach you here is we teach you how to think about problems, how to analyze problems. We assume that you'll come up with solutions yourself. And that has stood me in very good stead over the past 30 years of my life, quite frankly. And so I've always thought that's the value of effectively a liberal arts education. MIT was sort of science biased. Nevertheless, it's more of a liberal arts education. Harvard, the same thing. Isn't that really change the whole focus of what it means to be a Harvard graduate?
I agree completely. I think that for the most part, most people are not going to remember the content of things they've learned in the class, and it's really the approaches to learning that are most important. There's actually the thing you were mentioning about computers. Someone was telling me about a class in the engineering department that sounds incredibly similar to that. It's essentially, they're not teaching, I forget what it's called, it had a funny name, but they're not teaching you how to actually create anything. You just have an idea and then you make the project.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you use these ideas because they figure they can't actually teach you anything useful.
So, I mean, at some point you're going to be an alum, right? Another few years and they'll start looking to you for money. So now you're in there, you basically just want to get the hell out. I understand that. I've been to college. You go to college to get out of college.
No, I don't know. I kind of like hanging out here.
Well, I'm sure your parents will be very happy to hear that.
Soon you'll get tired of that small screen. Soon you'll want to get a bigger TV, because next year's runway is going to be spectacular compared to this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it'll all be high def.
Oh, absolutely.
So you need the plasma. But you'll be an alum. I know that when I was in school, I sort of didn't care as much about the curriculum because I just wanted to get the hell out. But once I got out, I cared about my alma mater. I cared about the people that are going there and what experience they're going to have. So projecting yourself forward even 5 years, right, or 10 years. So, you know, now you're just in your early 30s. What does it mean to have a Harvard education at that point?
I suppose it's useful because people look upon it highly. You've learned...
This sounds like an interview. I know. I apologize. I feel like, and why should you work here?
Well, I suppose like the value of like how you've learned how to think, and just the fact that it'll probably be easier to get jobs.
Is that really what it's about? Because you had mentioned, I think, a couple of weeks ago that really the only A's that count are the A's on your diploma. By the way, Steve Golson said that he looked at his diploma and there were like 6 A's in it, so apparently it was better to go to the Albany Academy of Ancient Anthrax than it was to... But that, I think, is an interesting question. I mean, you're obviously exposed to people who have the ability to think great thoughts, And that's what the professor is supposed to do. I'm surprised the faculty has not come beyond that. I'm looking here back again at the Crimson. It says, the role of general education. Sorry, I'll start again. The role of I'll start one more time. The role of general education. I now sound like Bill Cosby talking about the Puddin' Pops. The role of general education, as we conceive it, is to connect what students learn at Harvard to life beyond Harvard. Okay, first of all, is there life beyond Harvard?
I hope so.
But it seems that this is sort of, this philosophy of education turns every school into a technical school. Everyone's going to BOCES. That's occupational education in New York. I don't know what it is anywhere else, but you and I are both from New York, so.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's turning this into a technical school. I mean, I don't know. I think there's still, like, not pre-professional programs here. I think that there still is, like, a wide grasp of things that you're learning, even if it's they're maybe slightly applicable to the real world. But, I mean, I took a class for the current core on the swing era, and it was awesome. And when people ask me what's been the most useful class I've taken so far, sometimes I say that because I'll walk into a coffee shop and I always know what song is playing. So
I know for myself, I'm always dubious of mindsets that seem to believe that notions of broad theory can be disentangled from notions of direct knowledge. That the idea that you... I mean, I suppose that there are sort of medieval examples of completely abstracted, you know, academic thought that exists, where you really are arguing angels on the heads of pins. But for the most part, since the Enlightenment, I think there is an understanding that broad theory goes hand in hand. There's a feedback loop between the realities, the earthy empirical realities of life, and the theories and the broad modalities we think of to try and explain them. And I wonder, I'm always suspicious of people who want to separate those and say, you know, we don't really need those broad theories and modalities. We just need the empirical stuff so that you can get jobs, so that you can understand things. I feel like, you know, you aren't even teaching that well if you don't include these broader, this sort of broader matrix of thought that liberal education, I think, is supposed to engender in people.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that's part of what makes the classwork here so interesting, is just because you have the opportunity to do more than just learn facts or learn how to be a lawyer or learn how to do something specific. But you sit around and you think about things and talk about it with your peers who are generally interesting. I think, I agree. I think that the broad scope is important.
I think it kind of smacks of anti-intellectualalism. That's all.
That's, I think that's been the biggest criticism.
So I want you to start a campaign here to overturn this.
The problem is that the current core is also problematic, and so they're really working on a way to get rid of it. The current core, it's very specific, and some people think that it's very arbitrary, the subjects that it's divided into. So I think that they're working on trying to create something better, and this is part of the process.
All right. Well, listen, I'm looking here at the time, and it looks to me like you've got about 2 minutes to go.
I know, I'm getting nervous. I have to run downstairs.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're gonna let you go.
Oh, okay.
All right. Hey, I understand what's important. I understand what's important. What's important is this is the season finale tonight?
Part one of season finale.
Okay, you went to Harvard, or you're going to Harvard. What the hell does that mean?
two part season finale.
It means a greater share. That's what it means. It means two more points and a bigger share.
Eliza, thank you so very much for filling us in, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you next week.
Okay, great.
Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. There is an anti-intellectual quality to it. I have been, you know, on the one hand, I think that there are advantages to going to a vocational program. I mean, I went to broadcasting school. I didn't want to learn the theory behind radio. I didn't want to build radios. Here's the joke, is that this is not radio repair school. This is radio school. The idea is to learn a set of skills, practice those skills from people that know how to do that. There's huge value in being able to do that. But I think our universities... The value behind a university education, any university, is first and foremost to teach you how to think and to ask questions and to realize that the models that you have for thought, can be broken down, they can be questioned, they can be changed, they can be rebuilt, that you get to define your own philosophy. You can look at all the philosophies out there or just make up one yourself.
Well, I think, as I said, I am suspect of people who believe that this sort of factual technical information can be disentangled from the notions that sort of overgird it. Because what that says to me is you don't believe in overgirding notions. You don't believe in these overarching philosophies. And that, I think, is absurd and is even dangerous. To not think that, to say to yourself something like, you know, I'm teaching facts here, ergo, I don't need a whole bunch of theory. I mean, my first question is, well, how are you determining what facts are?
Well, they're in the book.
And right, exactly. And something is going, did you choose the book? You know, they beg question after question.
It was on the approved list.
That's right.
I mean, that's what it ultimately gets down to.
It is. It dumbs these questions down to a point where I think it's dangerous for people who receive this kind of education.
Now, if you are a follower of Marxian economics, kind of apropos of the Randy Newman song we played in the last break, you would come to the conclusion that there's a reason for this, that in fact we don't want the populace to be educated and be able to think. We want them to simply be tools to be able to plug and play into the system.
But you know, my assumption always was, and I think on that level, I am a Marxist. I certainly don't believe all of Marxist dogma, but in the sense that people in charge want pliable subjects rather than citizens. I think that's to a great extent true. But
then we wind up in the problems that we have right now.
Exactly. And bastions like Harvard and Princeton, Yale, MIT, the Ivy League in general, Stanford here.
Absolutely.
These
the
are
system.
Places that are supposed to produce the people who do think for the rest of us. You know, these are the bastions of higher learning where these people are comfortable with theory. They're the gold people in the Platonic world, you know, and they're supposed to at least, these people are supposed to have an idea of what's going on, even if the people who go to technical school don't. And I'm just concerned that with these kinds of modifications to curriculum at institutions at the highest level,
right,
who will be learning this?
Right, right. You're going to have to open your own college. The Sean Meehan College of General Knowledge. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take our last break. We'll play a little Robert Palmer, some early Robert Palmer, before Power Station, before, the dancing hot Velveeta mamas, you know, with the bright red lips and the little black dresses. And we'll come back and we'll finish up the show. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Can you hang us with us for the rest of the show?
You bet.
All right, good. And Sean Meehan, and we're all asking you to please stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Man up.
100% uninterrupted direct digital feed straight into the pleasure zones of your brain.
All night long.
What the hell is this?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 54 minutes into this second hour of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sean Mee, and Sherry Stevens. Robert Palmer, some people can do what they like, what they want.
Some people can do what they like. I believe that
Island
is,
Records.
Yeah.
Right? He did all these kind of calypso-y things. We were talking about it during the break. It's a shame. I think, slightly misconstrued what I said. When I said I didn't like the Power Station stuff that he did with... God, who was that with?
There was the guy from the Hungry Like the Wolf band.
Yes, right.
And there were some luminaries of the period.
Exactly.
In Power Station.
And one of the things that I said was, I like that too, but he had his own unique style, and he died very, very young. You were saying in his 50s, I think.
Yeah, I think he was just in his mid-50s.
Yeah. And I don't think he'd really come into his own. I mean, he had the kind of voice and suave and...
He could have lasted. There was another decade
easily.
Of music that could have come out of that
new
guy.
New music.
Yeah.
That even Dylan would have liked. Speaking of which, Sting apparently has a new album out of Loot Music. Have you heard about this?
No, I have not.
Have you?
I haven't at all.
Yes, it's getting
Loot.
It's getting panned. It's getting, no pun intended. And you have to go very far to find the pun, I understand. But
well, you just have to go to the door of Zomfjord.
Yeah, some kind of Loot Music. Do you think there's a point when musicians should just kind of go, and scene? Done.
Car commercials, then Loots, and
I think that there certainly is a had it, lost it quality that many musicians seem to suffer from. But I also wonder whether there are some strange steps that he needs to take to revitalize his musical sensibilities. You know, sometimes you can have some off albums. You look at somebody like Paul Simon, and you look at the decline he had, you know, with otherwise good albums like Hearts and Bones and mm-hmm. things like that. But, you know, and then he hits with Graceland after some unusual moves and directions. And maybe this Loot album is something that Sting needs to do so that he can produce a good album down the road.
Andy Taylor.
Now he's from Duran Duran, right?
Duran Duran, right?
Yeah.
Robert Palmer. And I don't know who else was. You got me too fast here. You got me too fast here. They did Bang a Gong, Get It On, mm-hmm. Robert Palmer, Nick Rhodes, Simon Le Bon,
right,
Roger Taylor, right, and then John Taylor going into Power Station. So there you go. Besides Palmer, they recruited Tony Thompson, the drummer of Chic, to round out the quartet. So that was during they were power groups, right?
Right.
Wasn't there one from the guys from Led Zeppelin?
Right. There was Paul Rogers,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah,
it was
yeah.
The Firm. The Firm.
That's it.
Radioactive, I think, was their big hit.
No idea what you're talking about. I'm just agreeing here while I'm
Paul
looking
for Rogers, former singer of Free and Bad Company.
Okay.
Jimmy Page, former guitarist of Led Zeppelin.
All right.
And some other people who I suppose are luminaries in their little world.
All right. Was this music you listened to when you were?
I listened to Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin?
Okay. The mic is so good. It's picking up everything now.
It's a good mic, yeah. Led Zeppelin. But do you remember Power Station? Do you remember?
I do remember that.
Yeah.
I remember seeing, you know, of course, the videos, and then, you know, MTV videos were really big back then.
That's
so
true.
I remember that.
That's
well,
true.
Well, they had videos.
They had videos.
And they had it was sort of the time of the early digital drums, right? So it was like, the sample drums, that very kind of harsh attack, harsh release, and heavily echoed and heavily
right.
gated, and it had a sound to it.
Absolutely. There was a real, I was listening the other day to one of those 80s, 90s revival stations that play a lot of that stuff, you know, the sort of Flock of Seagulls, mm-hmm. Spandau Ballet
right.
kind of stuff. And I was really struck by the percussion, and there is so much phase shifting with those drums. You know, it is just...
If you're deaf in one ear, you're missing half the music. What the hell does that mean? That sounds like that should be a slogan for somebody. But who? Who would make that a slogan? iPod.
The Republican Party. The GOP this year.
Corey Little is the New York Yankees pitcher.
Ah, yes.
Corey Little.
suffered his tragic demise today.
Los Angeles Times, a small plane owned by Yankees pitcher Chloe Little crashed into a high-rise building on the fashionable Upper East Side of Manhattan today, killing at least two people and igniting memories, obviously, of the 9/11 tragedy. That was what was all over the news. So
sure, the stock market plummeted, I believe.
Is that true?
Yes. Oh. I my understanding is that there was enormous disruption.
Buy on fact, sell on rumor? Right. Whatever that, I think that's how it goes.
That's one of the things you learned at MIT.
I loved my fucking MIT education. And I've told this story before. I almost got thrown out twice. People think I'm kidding. I mean, literally got my ass tossed out twice. The second time was going to be permanent. And I'm glad that they didn't, because the stuff that they taught me at MIT, please, my degree is in city planning. When was the last time I planned a city? I didn't even plan Sim City. I haven't even planned a virtual city. But in terms of the challenges that life throws at you, and in my life there have certainly been many of them, The first and foremost that came to my mind was my whole gender dysphoria, transgender thing. And you look at that and you think to yourself, what the fuck am I going to do with this? I have all these competing ideas and social ideas and identities and what have you. And I thought, hey, this is just a problem set and I have to work through it. And here are some tools. And if I don't have the tools, I'll go talk to people who are experts in the field and I'll get the tools, and on and on and on. And we'll talk about it at some other point. I don't think it's surprising that There is a disproportionate number of well-known people in the gender field who went to Ivy League schools. I think because they had those tools to be able to...
Because they survived. Because they had the tools.
And didn't turn to drink and drugs, right? And those kinds of things.
They survived.
Which is the natural thing to do. So we didn't have a chance to talk about the comment from Rebecca Ney, which we'll get to next week, I suppose, where she said that we don't actually talk about real things sometimes. Well, that was kind of real. But like Steve Golson, for Steve Golson, we saved it to the last minute. All right.
Well, I do want to talk about this next week because I think there are a lot of interesting issues.
Very
that come
interesting
up,
issues.
Certainly peripherally to
yes. them. Yes. Rebecca had a little comment on the blog, and we'll make a point to that, and you can go read it, and we'll take more questions. Until next week, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. Thanks very much for sitting in. We won't see you next week because you got something with the kid.
My daughter's having surgery next week.
All right.
So I'll
thoughts
be with
and
her.
Prayers go with Pookie Bear.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And yep. And then maybe the week after, would you come back and you'll arm wrestle Parviz?
I will.
Excellent.
And I want his spot because he has a much better mic.
Okay. I can get another mic. That's just money.
I'm good.
All right. And you, we'll see you next week.
Oh, yeah.
Good. All right. Well, listen, you guys have a great week. Thanks very much for listening. www.schnauzerlogic.com. We're on the iTunes Music Store. And tell your friends. The best show no one's listening to. Take care. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Jenny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.